Thanks for listening to the best of The Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
Let's get into something serious, and this is the San Francisco 49ers. We know just released Reuben Foster, their big-time linebacker, big-time draft pick from a couple years ago, for suspicion, or he was arrested for domestic violence. And the Washington Redskins, Rob, picked up or claimed Reuben Foster off of waivers. According to Adam Schefter, they were the only team to put in a waiver claim for Foster. Now, let me just read what the report about Foster, the arrest report, said, the police report, when he was arrested in Tampa on Saturday night. Okay? This is what it says. Foster slapped his girlfriend, slapped the phone out of her hand, pushed her in the chest area, and slapped her with an open hand on the left side of her face. Officers observed a 1-inch scratch on the victim's left collarbone. Now, here's the thing. I mean, this is just terrible. And we know that this nation has come a long way in terms of its views on domestic violence.
Especially.
And the only way we're going to, and you may never rid it, you know, from society altogether. But the only way you're really going to stop a lot of men from doing this, including football players and professional athletes, is if the stigma becomes so bad and so negative that it's the last thing you'd want to do is be stigmatized as somebody that put your hands on a woman. And one of the parts that should be included in that is jobs. Now, I'm not saying if you he's just been charged, we'll see what's true or not. But this guy has a history of problems. Marijuana problems in the past. In February, he was arrested on suspicion of domestic violence. He had a bunch of guns with him. He's been on probation. And so he has a history. I'm not – if he's proven innocent, then by all means, the Redskins or whoever, you can go out and get him. But until then, you should not have claimed him, especially when you are a team that needed a quarterback just, what, a week or two ago, and you didn't even look at Colin Kaepernick, whose crime is standing up on behalf – of American citizens who have been shot
by
unarmed,
policemen
who are paid to protect and serve them.
Right. Unarmed.
That's worse in the Washington Redskins' eyes than a guy that was arrested for domestic violence.
And has a rap sheet.
Yes. This is terrible. And it has to stop. And the shame on the Washington Redskins, and I know the league probably can't do anything about it now.
But shame
but
on
when the collective bargaining agreement comes up, they should put something in there that a guy in this situation
pending charges can't be claimed until he's. No one's saying that if it all shakes out and he's exonerated, Chris, that he can't work or get a job.
Right.
But it just has a bad feel and look. That a guy's in this situation that you're falling over yourself to go pick up for a job. It doesn't make any sense.
No. It's bad all the way around. It
doesn't make any sense. But these are the same Washington franchise that has been like a disaster since Schneider bought them.
Yep.
They've only made the playoffs back-to-back twice. Chris, since 1991-92, it's been that long. That's how bad this franchise been. And also, it's the same franchise that refuses to remove a logo that most believe is racist.
Right.
And have over their dead body, basically, is what Schneider said. Exactly. That over his dead body, would he change the logo? And my only point is, no wonder they're bad. No wonder the people that run that, the Redskins don't deserve any good fortune with the way that they do their business. That's what I'm talking about. It's called karma. When you don't do right by people and the idea that you would bring a guy in who's marred with all kinds of situations and charges and whatnot, Chris, your priorities aren't right. How do you bring people in like that? And then they got the nerve to push out Doug Williams to have Doug Williams issue a statement.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm just going to call it like it is. We'll get the black guy to go out. Yep. Huh? You go out front and tell everybody that we're bringing him in.
And here's the thing, that, Rob.
I think it's terrible.
I agree. And if guys do this and they just get a slap on the wrist, or you know, the next NFL team picks you up, then they're going to keep doing it. Like I said, the stigma has to become so bad that the last thing you would want to be viewed as was somebody who hit a woman. It's like racism. Racism hasn't totally gone away. We know that.
Never have.
There are a lot of closet racists out there. But publicly, nobody wants to say they're a racist because the stigma has become so bad. And that's what has to happen with this. And I have two daughters, Rob, as you know, and as we say in the show's intro. One of them dated a football player. 6'6", 300 pounds.
300 pounds?
So, Reuben Foster isn't that big, but he's obviously powerful.
Right.
I can't imagine being a woman. Heck, being a man. When you're that much smaller than a guy like this. But being a woman and a guy pushes you in the chest, slaps you with an open hand on the left side of your face. Like, you don't know what this dude is going to do. And thankfully, he didn't go further. But can you imagine how frightened a woman would be when some dude, you're alone with a guy, and he's losing control?
I just think, and you know, I know we'll get the pushback about, you know, there were other cases where women lied and this, that, and the other
thing.
Okay? This is not a first time. He's got a couple other charges and different stuff going on here.
Right.
Okay? So there's a pattern here, Chris. This is not
our track record follows
exactly.
Period.
And that's the stuff you have to look at. And the other thing is, no one's saying he should be banned from the NFL. We're not talking about that. We're talking about there should be, like, let's get this thing out. Figure out what's going on here, and then you can make that decision once those kind of charges are levied against people. And that's what we're talking about. There was a guy, I don't know if you saw this story, Chris, who worked for a company who put out something on Twitter, but basically it was about a black coach being lynched after the – did you see that?
I saw that.
And his company, right, he put his name on it publicly – they fired him.
Yep.
Because those aren't with the company's values. I'm sorry. And you could say whatever you want about whether you agree or disagree, but to be in this situation again and again and again is when I think an organization, Chris, can say, this is not what we want. Yep. This is not what we represent. And you can't keep your nose clean. There's always some run in with the law, and that's why in this case with Reuben Foster, you should just wait.
That's all
what
we're
is
saying.
The wait?
That's all we're saying.
We're just saying you should wait. Why does this have to happen when he's on the commissioner's exemplars? He can't even play now.
And look, even if he did it, if he's proven guilty, I'm not saying he should never play in the NFL again.
Nobody said that.
What we're saying is pay your dues. Serve your time, whatever you have to do before you come back. There has to be some type of payment done, served before you come back.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joel Klatt, Fox Sports college football analyst. Joel.
What's happening?
We've been waiting to talk to you, man.
I'm ready to fight with you, Joel. I'm ready.
Why?
Let's throw him a few softballs first. All right. I'll give you a hint. It's regarding what happened on Saturday.
That's right. The game you did.
Okay. But before that, we just saw the rankings come out, and Oklahoma's number 5. Ohio State is number 6. Where did, Joel, I've long said I think they should go to 6 teams. I mean, you got a power five conferences. And so it's tough if you win your conference, you're not automatically going to get in, but it's supposed to be a big-time conference. Where do you stand on the 4 versus 6 or teams or whatever?
That's a good question. I have held the opinion for a long time. It's starting to soften a little bit, but my opinion has been that I've always felt like the number of playoff participants should be one fewer than the number of power conferences. And the reason is because the conferences own this playoff. You know, these commissioners do. It's not the NCAA. And so as soon as you grow it past the number of power conferences that are in the country, which are 5 right now, then you're going to have automatic berths into the playoffs. As soon as you have automatic berths, then the regular season is I think, devalued. And the reason that it's devalued is because the non-league games don't mean anything, and you'd be playing this week in conference championship games with Utah and Northwestern having a legitimate chance to actually go to the playoff with 3 and 4 losses.
No, that's
I don't necessarily
it.
Want to see that. I don't
sense.
Want to see Pitt having an opportunity to go to the playoff. So that's why I don't like automatic berths. But I will tell you that the fact of the matter is that if we're going to have this be a beauty pageant at the end and it's not earning your way in, then I think it should probably grow to 8 at some point. But if it does that, I'm giving a long answer. If we do grow it to 8 and it becomes an automatic bid type of deal with the conferences, I think we should do away with conference championship games and divisions. Because at least at that point, you can tell me who's the regular season champion of a conference, and it's likely going to be a team with 1 or 2 losses.
Right. Joel, what,
that makes sense. That's a good answer. Yeah, it is. What is the chances of Ohio, what needs to happen for Ohio State to make it into the Final Four?
Well, I think that you've got to root for Alabama first so that you can avoid some type of Alabama versus Ohio State argument. And then I would root for Texas. I think if Texas and Alabama win and Ohio State can beat Northwestern, then I think Ohio State's going to go. Quite frankly, I don't think a 2-loss Georgia team is going to be taking over Ohio State. 2-loss Oklahoma team's not going to be taking over Ohio State. And the way that now the committee is viewing UCF, and I think will view UCF with the McKenzie Milton injury and through that lens, I think that's the best and cleanest way that this team, the Buckeyes, can get in.
Now, you know,
all right, Joel, who do you think, because this weekend, let's assume everything happens as is expected. Alabama beats Georgia, Oklahoma and Ohio State win. Who do you think are the 4 best teams? If you could just pick the 4 for the playoff, who would you pick?
Well, that's a loaded question, right? I mean, because I think the 4 best teams with the highest potential are probably not the 4 teams that I would put into the playoff. And the reason is because I do believe that you still have to earn your way in. And in that case, if everybody wins that's favored to win, my 4 playoff teams would be Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Oklahoma. And the reason I say that is because Oklahoma just has a far better loss than Ohio State does.
Right.
It was a game that I did in the Cotton Bowl, that Red River game. They almost came back and won that game, save for a great drive at the end by Texas. And they would be potentially avenging that loss, so you could make the argument that Oklahoma defeated every single team that was on its schedule. It just took, you know, 2 games to do that for Texas, but that was the exact same argument for Georgia last year. So those would be the four teams that I would put into the playoff if every favorite team won.
So Joel, tell me now, I was watching the Michigan Ohio State game on Saturday. It was coming to a close, and you said something at the end of the broadcast, and I thought, Joel Klatt is talking to me directly. He said, here comes those silly hot takes on Monday about Jim Harbaugh.
Yes.
But tell me, how shocked were you about the way the game played out? Just give me your thoughts on the game first.
Yeah, so here's the deal. Michigan is not going to beat a lot of people with that game plan unless two things happen. They can run the football and they can get to the opposing passer. If those two things happen, they're going to beat almost everybody. But the fact of the matter is that they cannot set up and just be a passing team, and that man defense will get torched if you don't get to the quarterback. So both of those things went Ohio State's direction, and that's exactly what you saw in terms of the skill level being able to exploit that man coverage on the outside. So to me, that's what it was. I thought Ohio State's defense did one heck of a job. Their defensive line won the line of scrimmage, and their offensive line won the line of scrimmage. And candidly, it comes down to that. Listen, everything you can say, everything you want about the depth of the game plans and so on and so forth, but it came down to Ohio State's D-line and O-line won the game for them.
And what about Jim Harbaugh? How much blame does he take in this? He took responsibility, but I think a lot of Michigan fans thought this was the year we're set up. Ohio State was vulnerable, right? Michigan came in with the best defense in the country. Nation. Right, they had all these things going for them. They were 4.5-point favorites in Columbus. Everybody thought they were going to get this done finally, and Jim Harbaugh in his fourth year delivered, which would have been, right, a chance at a Big Ten title, beating Ohio State finally, and none of it happened. How much blame does he get?
Well, I mean, certainly some, because they don't go out there and they don't win. Now, you know, my comment during the game was more in line with, I think everyone is just going to focus on this result, and they're going to start talking about how he's so overrated, where in the grand scheme of things, Michigan is exponentially better off than they were in the 7 years between Lloyd Carr and when Jim Harbaugh arrived in Ann Arbor. Exponentially better. The record, if you take their conference record, or just the overall record, let's take their overall record in those 7 years with Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke. Did you know that that's the same overall record as teams like Oregon State? You know, it's barely above 500. So what they are now is a team that's actually competing at the top level. Now, they didn't get the job done last week in a 60-minute affair on the road. It's certainly frustrating, and it's also something I said last week, a bitter pill to swallow because of all the things that you just said. Ohio State was vulnerable. They were not what I would feel like their best version of themselves over the last couple of years. Michigan is a veteran team, in particular on defense. They were number one in the country on that side of the ball, and they seemed to have a quarterback that was going to take them to the promised land, and that was the only thing that they really needed in the last couple of years. And they laid an egg. Their offensive line played awful, and their defensive line presented no pressure in Dwayne Haskins' face, and that guy just obliterated that man coverage behind him.
One of the criticisms about Harbaugh, whether it was the NFL or now at Michigan, is he doesn't win the big game. Because I agree with you. I think he's done a really good job at Michigan. They are now viewed as a national power.
How?
Again, and consistently in the top 10 and all that. But what do you think in the big game? Is there something to it that Harbaugh just doesn't get it done in the big game, at least to this point?
If you're going to have that game plan, and it's going to be conservative by nature, and you have to be able to run the football. See, because here's the thing. It's very similar to the reason Mike Leach fails in big moments as well, because he's one-dimensional. If he can't throw the football, he's got no other avenue to go. If Harbaugh teams are not able to run the football, they really struggle. I mean, they've got nowhere to go. And because of that, I think that's where the criticism is warranted on Jim Harbaugh, because his ability to adjust offensively is just not there. If the train is on the rails, it's very good. And if they're able to run it on first down and stay on schedule and play with the play action pass, now we're talking. But if they just have to set up and pass on second and nine and third and seven plus, it ain't happening. It ain't happening. And it didn't happen in the National Football League for him, and it's not happening in those situations with Michigan. You look at the two games that they lost this year. Where were they forced to go? They were forced into a game in which they were behind and they had to just set up and pass the football because they couldn't run it, and they're just unable to do that. And again, it's the exact same scenario I would play out for Washington State and Mike Leach. If you take away their ability to pass, or it's snowing all of a sudden in November, guess what? They're not going to do it that
all
week.
Right.
It's not going to get done.
All right, Joel, great stuff, man. We appreciate the knowledge.
Me and Jim Harbaugh have the same number of wins against Ohio State. None.
Oh, well, that's interesting. He's also got three more NFC Championship game appearances.
Yes,
than you,
yes, he does.
And he also tell him. Me and Jim Harbaugh won the same amount of Super Bowls, too. None.
And you're not ranked seventh in the nation, Rob.
All right, Joel. Thanks a lot, appreciate Joel. It, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Last night was a historic night in the NBA. You might not know that, but it was. The game between Houston and Washington. It was won by Washington, believe it or not.
And boy, did they need that one.
Yeah. It's been that was a good win for them over Houston. 135-131 in overtime. But here's where the history was made. James Harden dropped 54 points for Houston. And then his backcourt mate, Eric Gordon, who was starting in place of Chris Paul, he dropped 36. Those combined 90 points is the second most ever by a starting backcourt in NBA history. And then when you add on that John Wall, starting point guard for Washington, scored 36, and Bradley Beal, the starting two guard, hit 32 points, that 158 points total is the most in NBA history by both teams starting backcourts.
Mm-hmm.
I want to use that to throw something out there. We feel like we're in the era of the guards, the point guards,
well, because
or the guards
no, right,
in general.
There are no big men anymore. The game has evolved. They don't want the big guy there anymore.
That's all I'm trying to say because – you know, there's this feeling that the guards are so much better nowadays than they were in the 80s and the 90s. And because you look at the numbers, and five of the top 10 scorers in the NBA are guards.
Right.
And that doesn't even include Steph Curry, who's injured. And then Russell Westbrook, who we know can score with anybody in the league. Doesn't even include a lot of guys like that. Jimmy Butler and all these other big scorers. Kyrie Irving. My point is this. I don't know. I will say the guards shoot better than ever, and they handle the ball better than ever. But I'm not sure that the guards are really better than ever. I say that because back in the day, a Joe Dumars, an Isaiah Thomas, a Magic Johnson, a George Gervin, all the other great guards, especially point guards, Rod Strickland, Eddie Johnson for Atlanta, all these great point guards, Tim Hardaway, they had big men that they had to feed.
Absolutely.
And you had power forwards and forwards who would score. Certainly centers who would average 20-something points a game.
Patrick Ewing.
Right. So the guards didn't shoot nearly as much. The offenses weren't based
around
them, the
guards. Not at all. Not if you had a good big man. And
right. It was based around the big man.
It was based around the big man. The game was played differently, and you're right. I just think that like people have revisionist history. Of you can't tell me that Isaiah and Joe D., if they were given the green light in this NBA, wouldn't be putting up these numbers if there was no big men to be involved and
right.
They had to take care of or at least, you know, account for. It's totally different now. So when people try to say, oh, all these guards are better than all the guards who ever played before, I just think that it's people being a prisoner of the moment. And you're scoring because somebody has to
score.
Somebody's
going to score.
You know that? Exactly. It's just like we talk about this, Chris, with on bad teams. Like a guy could put up numbers on a bad team.
Right.
Somebody has to score those points.
Yep.
So it doesn't mean that they're great. It just means that, yeah, there's nobody else there. They got to put them in.
And the lane is wide open. I mean, when you watch games like NBA Classic or something like that, games from back in the day, I mean, you see how the game was built around the paint. And there was no room to drive.
No.
Now that paint is wide open. So when you do beat your man, which is easier now than it used to be because you can't hand check, there's usually not a big man at the rim to stop you from scoring. Or
the rim protector. We've seen people this year, Chris, and we talked about
unbelievable.
It, score at will. Just go to the basket, nobody in the way. It's like a layup line.
Yep.
You're like, oh, this is crazy.
Yep.
And how easy it is to score.
Yep. And that's the point I want to make because, like you said, people I think are going way overboard. And we don't get me wrong. The guards are great. They're really impressive.
Nobody's poo-pooing what they're doing. But when you talk about all time, the game has changed so much that if you gave the green light to some of the guards who were playing, I think they'd be able to do the same exact thing.
You got so many guys putting up all-star numbers, guards, that it looks like there's just not enough space for all these great guards. No, some of these guys putting up all-star numbers are not all-stars. They're just on a team that's built around the guards, and the big men don't score anymore, and that's why they're putting up these numbers. And you can look, Boston is having trouble. You know, Kyrie Irving is their leading scorer. And Kyrie Irving is a great player. I think he'll be a Hall of Famer. Hit one of the biggest shots in NBA history. I don't think that's an overstatement.
No, not at all. Because that shot also, remember, it also capped a historic comeback of down 3-1 in the finals. No team had ever come back from a 3-1 deficit in the old days in the NBA. You're down 3-1. You ain't winning.
Yep.
It was over. So yes, it is one of the big shots in the NBA.
And it got one of the best players in NBA history, LeBron James, his third title. And the title that he, you know, got for his hometown city.
No, so it was most coveted. That's his most coveted.
No question. His biggest championship ever. There's no question about that. And so Kyrie's great. But you see the Boston Celtics struggling. They're 11-10. Portland. Damian Lillard puts up these huge numbers, and he's great too. But now they've fallen off. Remember, they were leading the conference earlier in the season. Now they're back down about the 6th, 7th seed, something like that. They've fallen on hard times. Houston struggling now.
I watched their game last night against the Clippers.
Oh, yeah.
I watched the end of that.
Yeah. Washington, we know, with Bradley Beal and John Wall, they're struggling too.
Even though they got a big win last night.
When your team is led by a high-scoring, small, like 6-foot-ish type point guard, as great as he may be, in most cases, your team's not going to be a great team. There have been only two, and that's why I think these are the two best small players of all time.
Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons. There's no way denying that.
Isaiah Thomas and Steph Curry, the only two to lead teams to championships.
And Isaiah was, I mean, for people who, if you haven't seen him play, go to YouTube and go watch some of that stuff. He was incredible.
Oh.
Zeke?
He is, I mean, look, I don't think he's the best ever. We know that. But you could make an argument. Most people wouldn't make it, but you can make an argument. He's the only superstar that can say, I beat Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, and Magic Johnson in their prime.
No doubt about it.
And he didn't have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
No.
He didn't have Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale.
Right.
He didn't have even Scottie Pippen. Maybe he had a Pippen, because Dumars maybe was the equivalent of a Pippen.
Yeah.
I give him that.
Yeah. So, but when you think of Bill Laimbeer and John Rick Mahorn and John Sally. These are not right. These are good players that all fit into a role and fit into that team and the toughness that they had on that team. But
it was all based on him.
Yeah, Isaiah was the cog.
He did have Aguirre. Mark Aguirre was a perennial all-star, big-time scorer. Went to Detroit, and to his credit, took a lesser role.
Yeah.
You know, start scoring a lot
less. But him
and
Isaiah were real close,
and they made that
deal.
And Dumars, obviously, great. But I will say this. Look, Dumars, Hall of Famer. Aguirre was great. Rodman, now Hall of Famer. But no other Piston on those teams with Isaiah was named to the top 50 of all time. And Magic had Worthy and Kareem with him named to the top 50. Bird had McHale and Parrish named to the top. So Isaiah didn't have as much to work with and yet beat those guys. That's how great he was. So we want to open this up to you. I just thought this was interesting. I thought it was something you could talk about based on what happened last night in Washington. 877-99 on Fox, 877-996-6369. What are your thoughts? Do you think the guards of today are just that much better than the guards of the 80s or 90s in the NBA? Do you agree with Rob and I that it's really just a function of how the game's changed and the lack of big men that give you 20 points a game?
Which is just the way it turned around. But when people started knocking down all those threes and winning championships, people, it's a copycat league. We get it. But it's still surprising. And there are a few big guys, but not like it used to be when Olajuwon and Ewing and all these other guys used to go at it.
It's become a jump shooting league.
Yes.
And I remember talking to LeBron James right before it was, you know, they had come off the practice court before the 2015 finals against Golden State. And that was their first matchup. And I said to him, does this team, because in my mind I was thinking this. I said, do they remind you, the Warriors, of San Antonio that had just beaten Miami with all that ball movement
right.
and hitting all those threes? And he laughed. He chuckled. He was like, nah. And he was like, LeBron wasn't worried about Golden State. He didn't predict they were going to beat him. But he was like, jump shooting team, you ain't going to win a championship.
No, normally
that was the thought, right?
But that was always the thought that, you know, because you'd also, Chris, you know, in the postseason NBA was dribble, kick the ball into the middle, into the paint.
And entry passing.
It was always a half-court game. There was no running up and down. It was more half-court.
Like the Showtime Lakers would run.
Right.
But when they didn't run, Magic, if you look at his high, it's Magic just coming down and feeding Kareem in
the
post.
And then if they doubled him or whatever, then he would kick it out to somebody who was open for a shot.
Yep.
That's the way it was done.